We've got new details about the killing of those aid workers in Gaza. It turns out Hamas deliberately baited the IDF to shoot at that convoy. This was carefully orchestrated by Hamas to lure Israel into killing those aid workers. This is all by design because they knew that it would spark massive backlash, exactly as it played out. Meanwhile, the Israeli military has completely withdrawn from southern Gaza, and clearly, the killing of the aid workers was the catalyst here. This was clearly due to immense pressure from Biden after that phone call between Biden and Netanyahu, when Biden gave Netanyahu an ultimatum. And look, I know Netanyahu is telling us that this will not delay the operation, the invasion of Rafah, but clearly Israel is starting to cave under the immense pressure. And you have Yoav Gallant who's saying that, in fact, they do not have a plan to invade Rafah. They do not have a specific date in mind. So, look, it's all about Michigan. It's all about these Democrat voters in Michigan. They are the ones determining the fate of millions of Israelis and the fate of Hamas, the fate of the hostages. So we will get to all of that coming up. The city of San Francisco has proposed legislation that would force grocery stores, which shut down in poor neighborhoods, to stay open for at least 6 months. Yes, San Francisco is proposing legislation. They want to give grocery stores, to give 6 months advance notice before they shut down. It's called the Grocery Protection Act. You cannot make this stuff up. Remember when MSNBC said that it's racist for stores to close down in black communities? They said if you don't take a vote from the local residents, if you close down in a black or Hispanic or minority community, then you're a racist because you've got to at least get their consensus or at least give them months of warning in advance. Well, this is actually happening. Retail stores in San Francisco, they've been closing left and right. It turns out shoplifting is not great for profits. In case you want to open a store up, a retail store, in case you want to open up a Nordstrom or a CVS or a Walgreens outlet, make sure that, or any sort of chain store, any sort of, any kind of franchise, make sure you pick a city where they don't, like, allow shoplifting and they don't encourage it, okay? I'm not an economist, but when stores are forced to give away stuff for free, it's not a very sustainable model. So you have the Gap, H&M, Walgreens, CVS, Nordstrom, Saks, they've all shut down in San Francisco. But the one thing that remains is these local corner groceries, these local bodegas, and now they are shutting down as well because it turns out they also need people to pay for products before walking out of the store. So the Grocery Protection Act would now require grocery stores to provide 6 months' notice to the city before they close down, or they will get heavy, heavy financial penalties. This is insanity. Okay, they're going to force these stores. First, they're already forcing these stores to redistribute wealth to the minorities. They encourage criminals to commit crimes. They certainly never punish the criminals. And when a company now just wants to basically close down and say, listen, I'm losing too much money, I can't afford to lose any more money, they're going to force them to stay open or impose financial penalties. I mean, it's literally Stein va Amira. And I just want to mention, you know, I use the term sometimes, as many of you know, you cannot make this stuff up. And I actually got a call, I got a voicemail from a listener. This is an eighth grade young man in eighth grade. It sounds like a very sharp, very astute young man, very nice young man. Says he's a big fan of the show. He's listened for the last 2 years. I guess he's been listening since sixth grade. So that's pretty cool. I'm not sure how many listeners we have in that age bracket. I know we have a lot of Bachrim. I know we have a lot of high school kids. He says he enjoys the show, but one thing, please stop saying you cannot make this stuff up. That's what he said. That was his request. And you know what's funny about that is he wasn't listening at the time, but when we first started the show, you know, sometime like 6.5, 7 years ago, we started in 2017, and I'm guessing it was within the first few months, I actually was conscious, I was worried, you know, people, that became like the catchphrase, and people would kind of make fun of it in a cute kind of way, in a respectful kind of way, you can't make this stuff up. And I was worried that maybe I was using it too often. I think it's great, especially what could be more relevant and applicable than in this day and age than you cannot make this stuff up, when literally you read a New York Times headline, and if it was fiction and somebody was making it up, you'd say, oh, this is so unrealistic, and it's actually fact. It's actually happening. So, you know, there's literally a black congresswoman digressing over here, as I tend to do, a black congresswoman who's in an interview today on Tuesday, she said, oh, yeah, I heard of this great idea. We should eliminate all income tax for black people, only for black people. I mean, have you ever heard of anything more racist in your life? And she literally said it with a straight face. She said, oh, I have a proposal that I'm thinking of putting forth, which is no more taxes for black people, only for white people. But either way, you know, so we had a vote. Back then, we had like an informal vote. I had people call, leave messages. Should I stop using the phrase? Should I keep using the phrase? And overwhelmingly, people said, use the phrase. We like the phrase. Now, I try not to abuse it. I probably use it once or twice a show at the most. But this boy made that request. request. If anybody else has any thoughts, please leave us a voicemail or send me an email, josh@vinnews.com, josh@vinnews.com. President Biden has announced another student loan forgiveness, and he is totally defying the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has already ruled that it is illegal for Biden or any president to forgive student loans and certainly to forgive millions of student loans. But, hey, look, Biden's poll numbers are plummeting. So, look, it's just a minor detail, a Supreme Court ruling. Stop distracting us with those irrelevant details. That's coming up another day. Another Boeing plane rips apart mid-flight. I'm waiting for a Babylon Bee headline that says Boeing miraculously goes 24 hours without a jet falling apart mid-flight. Okay, this is incredible. On Sunday, it was yet another Boeing 737, and Southwest flight was forced to make an emergency landing. An engine cover blew off during takeoff out of Denver, and video literally shows, it's called the cowling. It's the thing, this piece that covers the engine, and they take it off only to make repairs and for maintenance. And the engine, you see it like rip off halfway, flap in the breeze, then totally detaches as this plane is taking off. People are sitting there looking at it out their windows of the plane, terrified. But hey, at least Boeing hires a lot of, you know, blacks and Hispanics and a lot of minorities. So that's all that matters. Who cares about safety? And I'm not saying, by the way, that minorities are less capable of worrying about safety and ensuring safety than white people. I'm just saying that Boeing seems to say that because they say, instead of focusing on safety like we used to, focus on DEI. According to a new report from the Wall Street Journal, since 2019, grocery prices have increased by just a staggering ratio. Grocery prices since 2019. Who was president again in 2019 before Biden? I think that was Trump. And Biden, of course, is the one who's created record inflation. And by the way, inflation is still going up. They keep telling us inflation is down. The Consumer Price Index is coming out. I'm recording this Tuesday night. It's coming out on Wednesday. And they say prices are going up, still going up. But meanwhile, they're up about 37%. 37% since 2019. It's unsustainable. A shopping trip at the grocery store that would have cost $100. Now, if you're in San Francisco, the groceries have actually gone way down in price because you just load them into your cart and walk out the store. But everywhere else, a shopping trip that was $100 in 2019 now costs over $136. Those supermarkets, they are so greedy. You know, when Trump was president, the supermarkets, they were okay losing money or just breaking even. They had no interest in profits. They just wanted to make customers happy. But then Biden became president, and suddenly all the supermarkets woke up and said, hey, people are willing to pay a fortune for eggs and potatoes and loaves of bread, so let's be greedy and let's charge them a fortune. Some items, I'm going to read you the list over here. Eggs are up 63%. Okay, here's sugar's up 38%, dish soap 46%, sandwich bread, whatever that means, is up, because not all bread, it's sandwich bread, is up 34%, cereal is up 29%. Illegals at the Mexican border, trying to get across, they're saying, we want Biden, they are desperate for Biden to win in November, surprise, surprise. Here, you know how you know, what's the litmus test? How can you tell if a candidate is bad for our country, for the United States? Well, the one who the Venezuelans and the Guatemalans are rooting for to win, he's probably the bad candidate, okay? The one who Iran and China are hoping will win, and Vladimir Putin and Hamas, that's probably the president that we don't want for the United States. That's probably the bad choice. You know, Biden is an amazing president for pretty much every country other than the United States and for all the terror groups. But illegals, literally, somebody interviewed illegals at the border, a reporter interviewed them. And they said, we want President Biden to win re-election. Literally, they're worried. They're sitting there being interviewed by reporters, and they say they're worried that Biden is going to lose in November. And they say, very simple, because they want to get released. And they're being honest about it. We want to get released into the United States of America. What do you think we're doing over here at the border? And listen to this. 45-year-old Daniel Cortez of Honduras. He said, I want Biden to win, right? Richard Betancourt, who's a 46-year-old Venezuelan citizen, he said, if it's Trump, it doesn't matter how much I work or how much I want to work. They will not let me in. That's what he says. I want to work, right? I'm going there. I'm going to work hard, as though like that's okay. You could just sneak across the border and just, you know, raise your right hand and say, I pledge to work really, really hard. So I'm going to contribute. And why on earth is Trump so mean and so cruel that he doesn't want me in? But this is the most stunning quote that I saw. Alejandra Falcon, 26-year-old Venezuelan. She said, I can't wait to use the magic words when I finally get to the border. And I need to seek asylum. Credible fear. These are the words that she repeated to the reporter. Credible fear, credible fear. They coach them. Okay, George Soros goes and he pays millions of dollars for these lawyers to go down to the border. And they know the words credible fear. They know the words persecution, asylum seeker. They know the words that they need to say. And it's disgraceful. It is so, so incredibly despicable. All right, so we got a lot of Israel news to get to. As I mentioned, we're going to spend some time on this. It's very important. And look, it's dominating the headlines, not just in Israel, but in the United States. And, you know, even amongst the secular media. So the IDF fired two commanders over the accidental killing of these aid workers. Now, these men are scapegoats. These men did nothing wrong. Israel, they needed somebody to blame, right? They had Biden down their back, and he said, listen, you have to change your approach here because you can't keep killing innocent civilians indiscriminately. And it's just so disgraceful with the genocide stuff. Maybe we'll get to that a little bit later. But these men are scapegoats. They needed to fire two commanders, so they relieved them of duty. It never happens in any other war, okay? This stuff happens in Iraq. We told you about Afghanistan. Afghanistan, where Biden literally killed a bunch of innocent people, including an aid worker, including a bunch of kids, because they needed somebody to blame for the terror attack against U.S. personnel. Nobody got fired. Nobody got reprimanded. A report came out, and the report said, oh, it was a bad mistake. We feel really bad about this. They didn't even apologize. We feel really bad about this. Nobody's accountable. But when it comes to Israel, so look, it was a tragic error. The United States kills people inadvertently all the time in combat. Nobody gets fired, but only Israel. So, and by the way, a bunch of lower level officers were censured as well. But the most egregious part is, as I said earlier, we now know the details have emerged that it was Hamas's fault. Hamas intentionally drew the fire of IDF troops. They wanted to get these aid workers killed. And you know what's incredible is that Israel has essentially caved in. Like, I know they're not calling it a ceasefire, but literally Biden has this call with Netanyahu and he says, I'm giving you an ultimatum. I'm going to stop sending you weapons. I'm going to stop sending you money, funding, because you need to change your approach. He's demanding a 6-week ceasefire. Remember, they used the excuse of Ramadan. Ramadan is over, and yet they're still demanding a ceasefire. So that's how you know. And what happens then 2 days later? Israel suddenly pulls out troops out of the entire southern Gaza, right? The entire Khan Yunis and that whole surrounding area. And look, they're saying they're going to go into Rafah. We have no idea when they're going to go into Rafah. I'm not doubting that they're going to go into Rafah. But there's no question here that Netanyahu is basically telling Biden, listen, we're going to pull out right now and we're going to, you don't call it a ceasefire, but they ceased firing for all practical purposes. They ceased fighting, okay, at least for now, and then we'll see how it plays out. Getting back to this killing of aid workers, so this is the World Central Kitchen truck, right? So they had a drone unit that's watching this World Central Kitchen truck delivering aid. Okay, this is last Monday, and at around 10 p.m., the IDF noticed suspicious activity as the World Central Kitchen vehicle was joined by a convoy of several Hamas vehicles. Literally, you see Hamas with these convoys. They have terrorists with these machine guns swarming the entire area, surrounding it, because they steal all the aid, right? And they want to keep everybody else away, and they're on top of the trucks, so they're sitting there creating total havoc. Then Hamas terrorists climbed onto and into the World Central Kitchen truck, and they fired several times into the air to ensure that the IDF would spot them. Okay, so they're luring the IDF. They're baiting them. The convoy then split up, entered a hangar, and it became difficult at that point, because there are all these vehicles in the hangar, difficult for IDF to distinguish between Hamas vehicles and the World Central Kitchen vehicle. The IDF then attempted to call the World Central Kitchen workers and their headquarters. You have to understand, the IDF knows that there's a World Central Kitchen. That's the big, you know, humanitarian aid delivery group. So they try to contact them. They try to contact the people in the truck. They try to contact the people in charge at headquarters, to say, listen, the Hamas are now embedded along with your people delivering, your aid workers, and we cannot distinguish, and that's going to create major problems. And yet, nobody answered the phones. The calls were unanswered. Then the vehicles left the hangar over an hour later. So remember, Hamas is swirling. You have Hamas terrorists all over these trucks, and you have all these vehicles, and they have no, Israelis have no way of identifying, and it's pitch black, by the way. It's the dark of night. They have no way of identifying who are the Hamas terrorists, who are the aid workers. And then, over an hour later, the vehicles leave the hangar. And at that point, the IDF drone, and it's a pitch black dark of night. So they cannot tell. There is some sort of decoration or some sort of label or something on these vehicles showing that they belong to the WCK, the World Central Kitchen. However, the IDF cannot make it out because it's pitch black. Now they're changing the system where it's going to be like some kind of glow in the dark, something they could spot. or something brightly lit up, but they had no idea. And these vehicles are there, and Hamas literally faked out Israel to make it seem like they got into these trucks and these vehicles, but it turns out that they did not. But how on earth were they supposed to know that, the Israelis? And so the Israelis, you know, called, gave the order, these commanders, to fire onto these vehicles, thinking that Hamas terrorists were in there, because that's exactly what Hamas wanted them to think. They deliberately confused them and baited them into doing this, and it's disgraceful. And that has triggered now this massive, massive, I mean, it was bad before. It's so much worse now, all the pressure. So Joel Pollack of Breitbart, he wrote an op-ed, and he's spot on. It's a very chilling op-ed, but he is actually spot on. He says that Biden, why is Biden putting so much pressure? And by the way, this thing, Hamas, their timing is incredible. They did it before Rafah because they wanted to delay Netanyahu going into Rafah. So Biden needs Rafah to remain untouched. What Joel Pollack says is Rafah is really the last stand here for Hamas. The remaining battalions are all in Rafah. Biden needs Hamas to keep existing. That's what Joel Pollack says, and he's 100% right. Biden needs Hamas to remain intact and to not be dismantled as leverage, because it's his only way to force Netanyahu to agree to a two-state solution and mollify the Michigan voters. Okay? So in other words, Biden, to mollify Michigan voters, needs to protect Hamas terrorists. Nothing could possibly be more diabolical. Now, I'm reading you here excerpts from Joel Pollack. Hamas declared victory after Israel withdrew its ground forces from southern Gaza, partly in deference to President Biden's call for an immediate ceasefire. Israel now stands on the precipice of failure in the war. How could that be? Because the accidental killing of 7-8 workers from the World Central Kitchen, that was the trigger. But the problem, actually, I'm reading, was that Israel accepted responsibility for the welfare of the Palestinian civilian population in the first place, over and above its legal obligation not to target civilians, as Hamas does in Israel and in Gaza. In a typical war, each side is responsible for its own civilians. The side that can no longer protect its people loses and surrenders. Certainly the aggressor, as the Palestinians were in this case, has no right to demand special treatment, but that rule is inverted in Gaza. I'm going to interject here for a moment. So Pollack is saying, he's saying the whole point in war is we have our side, you have your side. I don't have to protect your civilians, okay? You want to protect your civilians? Surrender, okay? Any war, okay, look at any war that's ever taken place in history, okay? You want to get your civilians protected from harm's way? Get out of their way. Go, because we're attacking you, because you're the bad guys, you're the enemy. So get the soldiers away from the civilians. Here by Hamas terror groups, they embed inside, okay? So it's the exact opposite. There's Joel Pollack is saying that Israel from day one should have said, hey, listen, we're not responsible. The reason that any one civilian death is tragic. You know the reason for it? It's Hamas, because Hamas uses them as human shields. Period. We're not responsible. But because Israel has taken so much responsibility for protecting the civilians, that has led. And look, you know, they would have figured out another reason to blame Israel. So I get that. But that's his point. His point is that the problem is not the 7-8 workers. The problem is that from day one, Israel has had a responsibility and a culpability for something that no other, troops, no other country, no other nation has ever had in human history. Back to Pollack, the Biden administration facing protests from Arab and Muslim American voters in Michigan and a revolt by its own progressive staff began pressuring Israel early in the war to assume responsibility for helping Gaza residents. Israel accepted that responsibility as the price of continued American support. It opened Gaza border crossings to aid trucks over the objections of some families of Israeli hostages. So essentially, Israel caved into Biden's demands, and that made the Hamas wing of the Democrat Party basically lose leverage, which is pretty amazing, because Israel basically, you know, they're basically forcing Biden, meaning Muslim voters in America, the Hamas wing of the party, they're forcing Biden, listen, you got to pressure Israel, you got to pressure Israel. Every time Israel basically conceded to Biden, what they were doing is they were weakening the position of the Hamas wing of the party. And then, of course, they have to up the ante. Then Biden has to put even more pressure for Israel to make even more concessions. It really is staggering, startling when you think about it. Back to Pollack, as Israel continued to advance, the Biden administration faced increased pressure from the Democratic base. The White House began to talk of a Palestinian state. The idea of a Palestinian state had been an obsession for the Biden administration even before the war. After the war, a Palestinian state was a non-starter in Israel, which had just been attacked by a self-governing Palestinian territory. But for Biden, it offered a way to placate his critics and score a foreign policy achievement. So the White House then tried to slow the Israeli war effort out of concern that if Israel won too quickly, the U.S. would not have leverage to force Israel to accept a Palestinian state. He's spot on here. Effectively, Biden began propping up Hamas to force Israel to accept his vision of the Middle East. The White House warned Israel, do not enter Khan Yunis, Israel defied Biden, entered Khan Yunis. Israeli troops found recently abandoned tunnels filled with cash as Hamas leaders fled to Rafah. By early February, Rafah was the last Hamas stronghold. Biden put his foot down again, expressing concern for civilians, but also trying to preserve Hamas as leverage against Israel. Israel defied Biden again, launching a daring raid that rescued two Israeli hostages from Rafah. It was then that reports began to appear in the Israeli media that the U.S. was slow-walking the delivery of weapons and ammunition. Biden began openly warning that Israel would lose American support if it moved into Rafah. And then in March, Jake Sullivan, who was one of the original Russia hoaxers, Pollack points out, summoned Israeli aides to talk. The Biden administration pushed for a ceasefire resolution at the UN and eventually dropped the insistence that it be linked to a hostage deal. Meanwhile, Hezbollah began stepping up attacks in northern Israel. And so even before the World Central Kitchen disaster, Israel was in a difficult, if not impossible, position. And then he ends, Joel Pollack. He says, at this stage, Israel has three choices. One, it can press ahead into Rafah, hoping Biden will not follow through with his threats. Two, it can change governments, hoping Biden is friendlier to someone not named Netanyahu. Three, Israel can wait until the elections are over in America, hoping that Trump replaces Biden, or that Biden, no longer constrained by fear of voters, will finally help Israel win, as he should have from the start. Great, great points there by Joel Pollack. I'll mention this, you know, this CNN report. Listening to CNN interview, there's somebody who's a Jewish writer. I don't know his name, but a Jewish writer, okay? And he's sitting there saying the most heinous, vicious things about Israel. And this is somebody, he's a journalist, and apparently he covered wars. He kept referencing, Bosnia. And he was basically talking about genocide and accusing Israel of genocide. And I'm not even going to sit here and respond because I won't dignify the insane, absurd drivel that he was saying with a response. But I need to make a few points just so we're aware of what's going on here. This is on CNN. Okay. This Abby Phillips. Okay. This disgraceful leftist Abby Phillips interviewing him. And, you know, and even she was forced to actually make some points, which are such obvious points about why it's so ludicrous to accuse Israel of genocide. He's saying, well, look at the numbers. He's talking about the numbers of civilian casualties. So the first disgraceful part is that they keep quoting the same numbers, regurgitating the Hamas health ministry and, you know, the Gaza health ministry, as they call it. And look, I want to show you the anatomy of how they create a fake baseless accusation of genocide, and it can be reported in the mainstream media. And it's like a thing. Okay. It's like they treat it like legit. It is as insane as saying that there's purple dragons flying across the sky, but they make it legit. How? Number one, with this fake health ministry, this fake fraud health ministry. It's known, it's proven time and again. I don't have to tell you. Even Biden said it. He said the numbers are worthless, they're made up, and it's proven because they have a system for figuring out the numbers. They just make the numbers out of a hat. Statisticians have analyzed this. But so it's run by Hamas. It's run by Hamas. They have the number 30,000, and then there's the number of civilian casualties and kids and this and that. For all we know, not a single child has been killed, a civilian casualty, and then, well, there had to have been a few. That's not the point. We have no basis. We have no numbers. It's made up. Those numbers, they repeat them again and again and again as if they have legitimacy. And then there's Abby Phillips on CNN. She, like, makes a comment to him. She's like, you know, we don't really have verification of those numbers. And he says back, well, yeah, but look at the pictures. A lot of numbers. So, and I'm going to interject over here for a moment and just point out, a bunch of you made this point, that Trump, you know, we played the clip last time of Trump criticizing Israel, saying, move it faster, stop killing people, end the war. And a lot of you said the same thing. You said, listen, what Trump was doing was he wasn't criticizing Netanyahu as much as he was criticizing Biden. That's why he threw Biden in the middle of those comments, because Biden's the reason Israel could have had this whole thing wrapped up in 6 to 8 weeks if they had been allowed to do it their thing, to do it with airstrikes, if they had been allowed to bomb from the air, carpet bomb, level every building, and just get rid of the terrorists, get rid of whoever you need to get to. But because Biden put enormous pressure, that forced Israel to slow everything down and to slow walk this whole thing, dragged it out. And now Bibi's getting the blame for something that really was totally on Biden, and he's culpable. But putting that aside, back to CNN. So then this so the numbers are worthless. Then this Jewish journalist, he says, I've seen genocide. He says, look at the Israelis. He says, look at how many civilians they're killing. So she says, but what about intent? And he says, she says, do you think they have an intent to actually kill a certain ethnic group of people? Because that's the definition of genocide. He says, we don't know the intent. We don't know the intent. And then he says, listen, I'll prove it to you. And this is the part that really made my blood boil. He says, because look at the numbers. He says, we looked at Bosnia. We looked at places where there was like serious genocide going on, and they never killed nearly this number of kids. The amount of kids who have been killed, they have no idea. But let's assume he's right. The number of kids who have been killed in Gaza, so many kids. How could that be happening by being done by the Israelis if they're not doing it on purpose? That's what he said. He's saying otherwise. How do you explain all the numbers? And it's ridiculous. It's so obvious, but I'll just say it. Because this is the only war where the bad guys are embedding themselves. They're using the kids as shields. They're staying in these kids' bedrooms. They're in these kids. They're in tunnels underneath these kids' houses. They operate in schools and in hospitals. They go where the kids are because they exactly want this. They want trying to evoke this reaction for all these years. Now they got it. So you understand the self-fulfilling argument over here. Well, it's genocide. No, it's not genocide. Well, it is genocide. I'll prove it because look at the numbers. Well, those numbers are made up. No. Look at the numbers. Okay. So they make up the numbers. Now those numbers are real. Okay, but look at the numbers. Well, but it's still not genocide because the Israelis are not trying to kill. They're not trying to kill kids. They've killed 12,000 kids. In Bosnia, they killed like 800 kids. So how do you explain that? 812,000. So the answer is, obviously, because if that number would even be accurate, which it's not, it's because Hamas is hiding behind the kids. And that's exactly why Hamas does it, so that they'll say this, but then they say this, and then they take it seriously. And then she pushes back, and she says, well, you know, Hamas is embedded with the civilians. And he said, listen, I'm not a lawyer. I'm just saying you need to investigate it. The Israelis are committing genocide. Now Elizabeth Warren is saying that the Israelis are committing genocide. And one other point, because I was also listening to, this is not connected to Israel, really, but I just got to get it off my chest here. The Israelis, I'm listening to MSNBC for a few minutes. Eric Swalwell, Congressman Eric Swalwell, who's a treasonous person, by the way. He should be in jail. He's a traitor to our country. Gave away secrets to China. But Eric Swalwell, they're talking about Ukraine aid, okay, and how Marjorie Taylor Greene is threatening to unseat Mike Johnson if he passes aid to Ukraine. Whatever. We'll have to hash that part out a different time. But he says, aid to Ukraine. He says, what are these Republicans thinking opposing aid to Ukraine? It's not money that goes to Ukraine. And we've said this before, but I got to repeat it because they literally use this as a talking point. It's egregious. It's totally egregious. The money's not going to Ukraine. He says $57 billion went to money that was sent to Ukraine really was sent to the United States. It's our money. We're keeping the money. This is great. It's creating jobs. And it's exactly what Trump always says about the military defense contractors, the military defense establishment, how the money that they call ostensibly funding for outside countries like Ukraine to help them in a war against Putin, and they have all these so-called ideological reasons and all these explanations and why it's a good thing. They're doing it to create jobs. They're bringing the money home to their own districts. They're doing it to pump money into the U.S. economy. And that's what's so disgraceful. These wars to them are just money-making schemes, and it's just spending more taxpayer dollars that we don't have. It increases inflation, of course, but they don't care about that. But they're saying it. This is what they're saying. He's saying $57 billion of that money went to defense contractors. We're manufacturing weapons in the United States. Then we're sending it. He's like, that money doesn't go to Ukraine. It goes to the United States. We turn it into weapons, and then the weapons get sent to Ukraine. So literally, now again, the weapons are literally doing nothing. They're prolonging a war. So it's making more people die. Any dollar you send to Ukraine right now, it's prolonging a war that makes more people die. Well, but doesn't it hurt Putin? No, it doesn't hurt Putin. Putin loves this war. Does he look like he's hurt to you? He seems very, very happy. Putin is laughing all the way to the bank. He's the richest man on the planet by far. He's selling oil at enormously high prices. And blaming it on this war, and yeah, some of his soldiers are dying. He just sends more soldiers. He loves it. He loves being engaged in a war. He's more popular in his country than ever. Putin has benefited more from this war than anybody else, except maybe Zelensky. Putin and Zelensky, okay? So that's what's happening. So then they go and say, well, think about what they're saying. They could literally throw the money in the ocean, okay? Or they could just create the weapons, spend the money, create the jobs, manufacture the weapons, put the weapons in the ocean. It would probably be as good use as it is going to Ukraine, maybe better. Because it's prolonging the war. They got to end this war. Just declare a ceasefire, negotiate, give some land back to Putin, and it's over. But the point is that the point is that they go and they say, listen, this money is going to go, and they make up a cause, okay? Oh, it's Putin. We got to get Putin. They're not hurting Putin. They're helping Putin. We got to get Putin. Oh, we got to get, how are we going to get Putin? By creating jobs in Pennsylvania and in Texas and other states, manufacturing weapons, then we're going to go and send those weapons over to Ukraine. Oh, look at all this money that I just pumped into the economy, which is what the Democrats want to do, but they have no justification. So Putin gives them a justification to do that. It's just really, really totally just sickening and disgraceful. Sorry. All right. So let's get to some other news here. A caller pointed out that the same week that these aid workers were killed was the same week that the Israeli government of course, ruled about the Haredi draft and basically issued a ruling defunding the yeshivas. They literally froze funds to the yeshivas if Haredim don't enlist or if Haredim don't agree to be drafted into the IDF, okay, into the Israeli military. So the caller just said, listen, you know, people can draw whatever conclusions they want, but it's just a fascinating, just put those two facts together. The same week that the courts defunded the yeshivas until they come up with some sort of agreement or concession or compromise on the Israeli Haredi draft bill, that same week, the Israelis kill inadvertently these aid workers, and that caused all sorts of terrible, the IDF killed these workers and caused all sorts of terrible, terrible pressure for Israel. So look, it's a great point. We have not discussed, I know some of you have asked me, why are we not discussing the draft? Why are we not discussing that issue? Generally, it's not the type of issue we usually get. Obviously, it's very, very important. Let me be very clear here. It's an issue that is near and dear to my heart, to our hearts. It is something which is so crucial. It is something that the thought, the horrific thought of a decrease in Torah learning and Limud Torah in Eretz Yisrael, Chas V'Shalom, or anywhere for that matter, that would be obviously tragic. That would be horrible. We're all on the same side here. I think we all agree. I have no question that the whole notion, the whole threat of gius, of draft, or of forcing Haredim to enlist, or freezing funds to yeshiva, that whole thing, the whole threat that's being posed here is horrific, unimaginable, unthinkable. It would be devastating, Chas V'Shalom. Hopefully they do come up with some sort of, they do work this out in a way that Haredim can continue to be exempt, like they've been exempt and deferred for all these years. But the mere thought, the mere suggestion, the mere hint that Chas V'Shalom, even one less word of Torah would be learned as a result of all this is unthinkable. It is devastating. It would be tragic. Okay, so I want to be very, very clear. We don't discuss it, you know, because it's just not really the kind of thing. Maybe we should. I'm not saying that I am against discussing it, but you know, that there's so much else going on in kind of daily politics and in American politics, which is what we tend to focus on. But yes, it is very important. It's a very, very big deal. So maybe we explore it at a later date. Another caller pointed out, you know, great point that Iran, right? Iran's terrified. Iran, they've been saying they're going to retaliate over this IRGC, commander who was, this Quds Force commander, Mohammad Reza Zahedi, who was killed by the Israelis in Damascus in Syria. And the Iranians have been threatening. They're full of bluster. They threatened retaliation. Remember, they did the same thing with Soleimani against Trump. And the caller made the point, there's a couple of points to be made here, but the Iranians are terrified, okay? We keep hearing about, and look, I don't mean to minimize, because it is very, very frightening, the prospect of an Iranian retaliation, obviously, but the Iranians are doing everything they can to threaten, but not actually, and you know how it is, the louder they threaten, Trump doesn't, well, maybe Trump threatens, but, you know, most countries, the louder they threaten, the walk softly and talk softly and carry a big stick, right? Is that what Teddy Roosevelt said? You don't have to vocalize. If you vocalize, probably that means that your bark is worse than your bite. Not a guaranteed rule, but we've heard threats from Iran many, many times over the years. So, but the caller pointed out, you know, Iran said, listen, if you do a ceasefire now, it reminds you of like the bully on the playground that keeps saying, well, if you do this, then I'm not going to hurt you. If you do this, I'm not going to hurt you. And like keeps giving you way out. They're giving themselves a way out, right? That was the point the caller made, is that the Iranians at one point say, listen, if Israel carries out a ceasefire, then we'll cancel our plan to retaliate, because Iran doesn't want to retaliate. Well, the caller's spot on, because there's a report out today that U.S. intel officials say Iran is unlikely to attack Israel directly in retaliation for the assassination of the Quds Force commander, Mohammad Reza Zahedi. And they're going to rely on proxies instead. So that reaffirms exactly what the caller said. Even without Israel agreeing to a ceasefire, the Iranians are, it seems, backing down, according to CNN. And let's hope that that's the case. The unnamed intelligence sources told CNN Iran is not interested in escalating the situation. They're afraid of retaliatory attacks by Israel and by the U.S. And look, I don't doubt that. Again, you can't rely on that. You can't count on that. You have to be vigilant, but it is pretty fascinating. What else is going on? Another disgraceful move. The Biden administration is going to require products that are exported from the West Bank to be labeled either occupied territory, it's not clear yet, but to be labeled a label that says that they're not from Israel, or that implies that, or says that it's from occupied territory or West Bank settlements or something along those lines. So this is egregious. They're reversing Trump's policy, which was that it can say made in Israel when it's exported from the West Bank. Biden's going to require products that are produced on Israeli settlements in the West Bank to be labeled as coming from that area. Again, that region, I don't know how they're going to word it, but clearly they're going to try to show people that this is not from Israel, and they essentially they want people to boycott those products. This is intended to increase pressure on Israel over what they call settler violence in the West Bank. It is made up. It is fabricated. There is no settler violence. Maybe there's a rare occasion, an extremely rare occasion, where somebody does something in self-defense, but this is not an issue. And we know that Biden has imposed sanctions on multiple farmers in these Israeli settlements. So this move would reverse a policy introduced by Trump in 2020 that required goods produced in the West Bank to be labeled made in Israel. Here's what Hillel Fold wrote against Biden. Quote, when are we going to finally understand that Biden is no supporter or friend of Israel or the Jews? Yes, he's done some good things, and for that we should be grateful, but this war would have probably been over if it was not for his constant pressure and threats. I don't know about you, but that's not how I treat friends. And then he said, this news makes me physically ill, responding to the news about the labeling of products that come out of the West Bank. All right, in other news, a sports reporter who once interviewed Biden has come out and said that this is, her name is Sage Steele. She once interviewed Biden, and she works for a cable channel called ESPN. She used to. She doesn't anymore. Now that she doesn't, she's free to say that the whole thing was scripted, and it's unbelievable. This is in 2021 that she interviewed Biden, and she says the whole thing was scripted literally down to every single question. They did not allow follow-ups. They totally restricted her, the Biden people. And this was back, and of course, with ESPN's support. And this is all the way back in 2021 when Biden still was able to sort of, kind of, get out a few, you know, string a few sentences together. So listen to this clip.
This was about 2 months after he took office. That was an interesting experience in its own right, because it was so structured. And I was told, you will say every word that we write out. You will not deviate from the script, and go to the word. Like, every single question was scripted, gone over dozens of times by many executives. It was very much, this is what you will ask. This is how you will say it. No follow-ups. Next.
No follow-ups. Dozens of times. Okay. They went over dozens of times. Questions, all scripted, no follow-ups. So they had to be so, and this is, again, this is a couple of years ago. And think about how incredibly terrified they were that they'd actually, that she'd actually ask Biden a question that he hadn't been prepped for and hadn't rehearsed a million times. What's even more incredible is, this is a sports reporter, okay? Like, what do you think she's going to ask? This is not like that she's being interviewed by Bill O'Reilly over here, or even somebody, you know, she's a leftist, okay? She's a woke leftist. She's not exactly a conservative, okay? So she's not asking tough questions. And even now, her agenda is not because she's out to get Biden or she's pro-Trump or anything like that. But the incredible thing is, what you're going to ask him? His favorite NBA team? How he handles a slider? You know, she's not going to challenge him on the Afghanistan pullout. And yet, it was totally scripted. They were so terrified. No deviation. And, she's, you know, I was told, you'll say every word we write out. Do not deviate. Every question scripted. Do not ask a follow-up. Gone over dozens of times by executives. All right. New York City homeowners are being threatened with jail time if they have squatter. Listen to this. New York City homeowners, we've told you about the whole squatter situation. It's insanity. And if they have squatters in their home in New York City, and if they shut off the water, the heat, or the electric, or they change the locks, they could get thrown into jail and fined huge amounts of money, penalized huge amounts. This is, it's like, you can't believe that we're talking about the United States of America. It sounds like some kind of third world country. The woke city of New York is being overrun by rampant crime, illegals, and now squatters, right? So the law is 30 days, okay? They become tenants after 30 days. Listen to the rights they have. New York City homeowners are being forced to allow squatters to live rent-free, and they're being forced to pay the electric bill and maintenance bills. Under New York City law, after 30 days, they can claim squatters' rights. Several homeowners told CBS they would be arrested instantly if they change the locks, evict the squatters, or turn off hot water or other necessities. They're forced to pay for the upkeep of the home. One woman told CBS she's in debt, and her credit cards are maxed out because she turned off the hot water And then the squatters reported, we have no hot water. So they fined this woman. They literally gave this woman a $250 fine every single day. It's up to $15,000 and punishable by 5 years in jail. Remember when Biden claimed that 87,000 new IRS agents, they were not going to they would only target the rich. They weren't going to target the middle class. I mean, as though anybody believed that. Well, now it's been debunked officially as a lie. It turns out that the vast majority of new audits that are being done on people who earn less than $200,000 a year. And the reason is because that's where the vast majority of taxes cut. Yeah, they have a few rich people, and that could bring in some money. But most audits are going to be on the middle class. It's very simple. That's the majority of taxpayers are middle class. You don't need 87,000 IRS employees to audit the top 5% earning more than $400,000 a year. In addition, they don't want to deal with the richest people can hire the most expensive lawyers. The IRS doesn't want to deal with these fancy hotshot lawyers who can be afforded by the wealthy. So we knew it was a lie, but now it's official. The numbers data shows that the people being audited more than anybody else are the middle class people earning less than $200,000 a year, and they're paying plenty of taxes, and they cannot afford to pay any more taxes, and it's just egregious. The city of Madison, Wisconsin, doled out $700,000 in COVID relief to illegals. This COVID relief, such a big sham, such a Ponzi scheme, really, really so incredibly disturbing. The city of Chicago, meanwhile, has spent, and by the way, Democrat states handed out more than $500 million of COVID relief to illegals. $500 million of COVID relief went to illegals, and that is literally Biden subsidizing illegal, I would call it undocumented, but Biden himself called them illegals, so people might find it offensive if I don't use the term that Biden used, which is illegal. But how could somebody be illegal? Because they're a person. Yeah, they're a person who's in the country illegally, so their whole existence in the United States is illegal. But either way, Biden subsidized illegals under the fake premise of COVID-19 pandemic relief. They brought COVID to the country, and then we paid the money COVID relief. Chicago has, and by the way, we're not getting into this now, but, Mike Johnson with these continuing resolutions, Mike Johnson being afraid to shut down the government, we're literally, every budget right now that gets passed, they have not passed a new budget or agreed to a new budget since Pelosi was in charge. So now all they're doing is it's called the continuing resolution. They just keep passing the same budget over and over again with a major increase because they increase it every year. The increase spending, there's a certain baseline increase, the automatic increase that kicks in. So they have the Pelosi budget. They're spending a fortune. The Republicans are in control of Congress, and literally we keep passing Pelosi's budget year after year, which causes insane deficits. All right, we don't have time to get to the Chicago story over here. Biden, in defiance of the Supreme Court, has announced a new plan to forgive student loans. The court has already said it's illegal for Biden to forgive student loans. They tweaked it a little. It's the same thing, and it's going to get struck down by the courts again, but the question is when. So the plan would fully eliminate accrued interest for 23 million student loan borrowers. It would cancel the full student debt for 4 million borrowers and provide more than 10 million borrowers with at least $5,000 in debt relief. Now, why is Biden doing this? He wants to bribe people's votes, right? He's desperate. But it goes even beyond that, because which group especially benefits from student loan forgiveness? The younger voters under 30. They're the ones who find this most appealing. Well, turns out that the polls show that Biden is in huge trouble with voters under 30. And the tables have turned here. Trump, now according to NBC News poll, which is probably slanted toward Biden, Trump leads Biden 58% to 40% with voters under 30 years old. Think about that. 58 to 40. Trump leads Biden, voters under 30. In 2020, Biden won with voters under 30. He beat Trump 60% to 40%. So you're talking about a huge, huge loss here. Biden is just losing these younger voters under 30 left and right, and that's the reason he's announcing this student loan forgiveness, which is illegal, and it's been struck down by the court, and the changes that he made are not going to make any difference. Well, then why is he doing it? It's going to get overturned by the court, right? Very simple. The Wall Street Journal said it. They said, quote, this will be the second attempt by Biden to magically make hundreds of billions of dollars of student loan debt vanish. The first time the Supreme Court took his magic wand away from him and laughed in his face. This is the Wall Street Journal talking. Why will this time be any different? Because it will be challenged in the court, but Biden is hoping the courts will allow the debt forgiveness program to go forward while the case is moving up the chain of appeals court. So basically, while it's making its way all the way to the Supreme Court, Biden's hope is that they let it remain intact, that they don't put a stop to it as it gets through the courts. And that will allow Biden, quoting the journal here, to enjoy the political advantages of the program, even though it's illegal. So he puts out an illegal program to just bribe people. Please vote for me because I'm going to forgive you. Hate your student loans, and interest rates are higher now because interest rates are through the roof thanks to Biden's economy, Bidenflation and Bidenomics and whatever silly phrases they use. So this is a huge pain point for people. And now vote for me. And now, well, but not until it gets way through the courts. Well, Biden is hoping that he can delay that process and allow the student loan forgiveness to take place in the meantime, while November comes and goes. And as a result, this program may still be intact come November. And he's hoping to steal away some young votes from Trump by doing that. All right. That's going to do it for this very, very busy Tuesday. And we will see you next time.